I'm delighted now to welcome to the program Daniel Stephen Crafts. He's a composer, and his new opera is called Too Much Coffee Man. It is being performed this weekend, Friday and Saturday, October 5th and 6th, in Anna Caseman Hall at the Cathedral Church of St. John at 7 o'clock. That's in Albuquerque. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
So you are doing something which perhaps has never been done before. Maybe you can tell us, but is this the first time that a comic book has been made into an opera?
As far as we know, it is the first ever comic book opera. I'm very pleased that it's Too Much Coffee Man by my dear friend Shannon Wheeler.
So how did you come to choose that comic book and collaborate with Shannon Wheeler?
Well, Shannon is a very old friend. I've known him for a very long time. And some years ago, we were having dinner in San Francisco. We both lived in San Francisco for a period. And the subject came up of us working together. And we both thought, well, this would be a great idea, but what would we do? He draws comic books. I write classical music. Well, somewhere along the line, the idea of an opera based on his character, Too Much Coffee Man, came to the fore. Now, this is a bit of a point of contention. He claims it was my idea. I categorically deny that, and I say it was his idea. But the one thing that we both agreed on was that it was a terrible idea. So then some months later, he had a dream that his characters were singing opera to him. So he got up in the middle of the night, and he sketched out some verses and a basic scenario, and he sent it to me, and it was tremendously funny. And I thought, oh, this could be great fun. So almost just as a joke, just for the fun of it, I set it to music. Well, now Shannon lives up in Portland, Oregon, and he goes out and he gets the Portland Center for the Performing Arts to sponsor it. They hire singers from the Portland Opera, and we put it on up there, and I think to everybody's surprise, it's a great hit.
So, extraordinary.
It was just a strange series of coincidences how it all came about like that. Then what was even more amazing is Shannon took it down to Comic-Con, you know, this gigantic comic book festival down in San Diego, puts it on there, and it's a great hit at Comic-Con. I mean, who would ever think this? Comic books and opera. But a lot of people came up to Shannon afterwards. They said, well, you know, I thought I hated opera, but this was really a lot of fun.
Right.
So.
I love it. Tell us about Too Much Coffee Man. Now, through our wonderful KSFR employee, whom I've known for over 20 years, Sean Conlon, I became aware of Too Much Coffee Man probably about 20 years ago, and it's a terrific comic. Tell us about it. I mean, this sort of kind of non-superhero.
Well, Shannon started doing the character about 20 years ago. It's amazing to think it's that old. He's that old at this point. But Too Much Coffee Man is just, as you say, a sort of anti-superhero or would-be superhero, a pot-bellied fellow who runs around in this red jumpsuit and basically just hangs around the coffee shop all day, waxing prolific about life, love, the meaning of the universe. And he and his buddy Espresso Guy hang out together in the coffee shop. And they're both secretly in love with the barista who sells them their coffee. But they're both basically nerds, so they never have enough courage to really go up and do anything about it. And she, for her part, they're just annoyances. They're just these yuppies with their cell phones that waste her life, as she says in the opera. And she really wants nothing to do with them. They're just irritants to her. But in the opera, what happens, it becomes a red letter day for Too Much Coffee Man, because as being egged on by his buddy Espresso Guy, he decides that at long last, he's going to throw caution completely to the wind, and he's going to go up and declare his undying love for the barista.
And because it is an opera, there has to be some boy meets girl, boy gets girl, maybe loses her, maybe doesn't. We won't give that away.
Well, it's he declares his love, and what happens after that, you'll just have to see.
Exactly. Now, this Too Much Coffee Man has a real following. I mean, it's going for a long time. It's what you would call a very successful comic, if not well-known, outside of people who follow that genre.
That's true. Shannon has a huge audience, and in the productions that we've done two productions of Portland, we've done the Comic-Con, as I mentioned, we did the Astoria Music Festival. It's always been Shannon's audience who comes to see it. We always get some traditional opera people coming, and they're, you know, by all means, they're extremely welcome, and they come and they enjoy it tremendously, even though they're kind of skeptical to begin with, like, just what is a comic book opera? But everybody comes and they end up really enjoying it because it's very funny. And, you know, it taps into the kind of contemporary attitudes and contemporary comedy that makes Shannon's Too Much Coffee Man strip so very effective. It's talking about our culture right now. It's not gods and goddesses or kings and queens or, you know, remote figures like that. It's everyday people and their concerns, their problems, and the humor that goes along with it.
I have to say, I think that coffee shops, and I'm talking to you right now from a coffee shop, the Santa Fe Bacon Company.
Perfect.
I think the coffee shops are kind of the archetypal place in the world today. So if you go to any city, anywhere, not only is there a coffee shop, but there are people in the coffee shop holding forth about how the world should be and how they could make it better.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Somebody asked me, I said, well, the opera's set in a coffee shop. And they said, oh, where? I said, absolutely anywhere in the U.S. or Canada or even Europe,
exactly,
for that matter.
Exactly.
Could be any coffee shop anywhere.
Now, every year I do a series on the Santa Fe Opera with Desiree Mays, who writes the book every year, Opera Unveiled, and we talk about all five operas, and most of them are 4 out of 5 historical operas where both the composer and the librettist are long gone. But we talk about what that relationship was like between the composer and librettist in the making of the opera. What was that like for you and Shannon Wheeler? How did you collaborate?
Oh, it was great fun, actually. I love Shannon's strip. You know, I think he's got this great sense of humor, this sardonic sense of irony. And so he sent me, as I said, he sent me a basic libretto. Actually, I don't think he even knew what a libretto was at the time, but that's perfectly okay. He sent me a basic scenario and some verses and things like that. And I said, well, let's make this a little bit longer. Let's take this and maybe we can make this into an aria here and some more material. And, you know, he fell right into it. And he essentially wrote it in rhyming couplets, which for poetry people is horribly retro. But, you know, it works, and you,
yeah,
with rhyme you can get a whole lot of comedy out of things, and so it worked really well.
So you call this genre gonzo opera. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's what I ended up calling it. We didn't call it that to begin with, but actually, it was a couple of years ago. I was up there in Santa Fe at a dinner party, and I met this wonderful playwright by the name of Thomas B. Woodward, who participates every year in the Benchwarmers Festival up there in Santa Fe.
Right, right.
The 15-minute plays. And Tom's are always the wildest, craziest of the bunch that they put on. So we're at this dinner party, and he's telling me about this, the last play that he did. It's all about a Miss American beauty pageant that goes hopelessly wrong, complete with sex change operations and lecherous MC and all sorts of things.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I've had more fun doing this Too Much Coffee Man thing than anything I've done before. Maybe this is the way to go. And so I've written 2 more of these gonzo operas with Tom Woodward, this wonderful playwright up there in Santa Fe. The idea of gonzo opera is this. First of all, it's real opera. It's not parody or pastiche or something like that, using these beautifully, wonderfully classically trained opera voices, but putting them in wild and crazy satirical situations and giving them colloquial contemporary language that you would never expect to be coming out of the voice of, of a classically trained opera singer.
Right.
And it's actually that irony that makes things even funnier than they normally would be.
Well, I like that it has potential for so many levels of satire, and yet one part of it is just plain old, really straight, which is the singing itself.
The beautiful singing, yes, yes. But I've been trying to explore just the idea of using these voices, doing the wonderful things that they can do, for all kinds of comic effects as well. I mean, not to destroy the beauty of the voices, not having them make weird sounds or anything like that, but singing beautifully, but singing words that are, you know, just utterly foreign to opera.
Right, right. Very interesting. We're talking to Daniel Stephen Kraft about his new opera, Too Much... Well, it's not that new, but it's his opera, Too Much Coffee Man. I guess it's new to New Mexico. Is that right?
This is the first production in New Mexico. And since I live here, I'm delighted to be doing it here.
Now, you have a small instrumental ensemble as opposed to a full orchestra. Tell us about that.
Well, it was interesting. When I started to write it, as I said, I had no idea that it would ever be done. I had no idea who would be doing it. And so I just basically sketched out a piano version of it. And then when we did it up in Portland, of course, we didn't have a fortune to hire a big orchestra or anything like that. And so I just scored it for piano, clarinet, and bass. And that really works much better. It makes much more sense to do it that way than it would with a big orchestra. It would overpower the sense of comedy. And in a way, this almost works like stand-up comedy opera, if you will, because it's all in a really intimate setting. And you, the band, you know, the three players in the band is something you might even have in a coffee shop. You certainly wouldn't expect the sound of a big orchestra in a coffee shop anyway. So with these other gonzo operas that I've written after that, I've again used small ensembles to do it, and that way it makes the whole production tremendously portable and inexpensive to put on, and I would think that's just what opera companies would be looking for, things that don't cost an arm and a leg to produce.
Exactly. I mean, the cost of opera is an ongoing concern for everybody involved in opera production.
Oh, it's exorbitant. But these you can put on very cheaply, and you can even, you know, a company could even make money doing this. I mean, that's a totally foreign idea to opera. But
and it's a shorter opera than your sort of normal full-length opera, at least a little bit, right?
Well, actually, we're only doing the first act. There are two acts to it, but the second act does require a little bit more elaborate staging. So we decided just to do the first act this time. It had come about because when Portland asked us to come back and do it again, because it had been successful the first time around, they said, well, can you make it a full evening and add a second act? And we said, sure, absolutely. That'd be great fun. Well, there was a wonderful singer who had tried out for the role of Too Much Coffee Man, and he had a beautiful, beautiful voice, but he just wasn't the right personality to bring off this comic character. And so when we were going to do a second act, I said to Shannon, you know, if we're going to do that, I don't want to lose this wonderful baritone that we tried out in the first place. And Shannon said, well, but he's so stiff on stage. And I said, well, make him a corporate executive. And Shannon said, how about a Martian corporate executive? I said, run with it. So the whole second act, which we're not doing this time, but the whole second act takes place on Mars.
So if we come on, I mean, this weekend, Friday or Saturday, and see the first act, will we be left hanging?
Oh, well, in a sense, but it really is complete in itself.
Okay, so why don't we do this? Let's hear a little bit of Too Much Coffee Man. Can we play an aria or something right now?
Oh, absolutely. The one that you'll have right there is Too Much Coffee Man's Ode to Coffee.
Excellent. Let's hear that right now.
Stimulate, articulate, and fill me with caffeine. Your dark roasts and shivers down my bony spine. You're really quite a catch, like a perfectly aged wine. Perhaps you think I'm joking, and perhaps I sound pathetic. I will love you always, even though you're diabolical. By shadows and shrouded by mystery, how caffeine got into a bean and was drank throughout history. Your past is dismissed. It is your future I am concerned with. I'm enticed by your aroma, but afraid of getting burned. Just you and me, coffee together till I'm old and bald. I promise to adore you if you promise not to scald. Can we be together? Perhaps drive to the sea. But now my thoughts are turning, perhaps due to ADD. That's attention deficit The girl of my dreams, who serves me coffee every day, she is breathtaking, beautiful, like the sun's golden ray. Her supply is overflowing. She smells of roasted beans. I hang on every word. Watch how she stands and leans.
And that was an excerpt of an aria by Daniel Stephen Crafts from his opera Too Much Coffee Man. So, Daniel, your bio said that you are self-taught, and I was wondering, do you feel like this gives you a kind of freedom that maybe conservatory-trained musicians don't have?
Well, it gives me an attitude that they don't have. I'll tell you how that came about. I was all set to, I had been accepted into the graduate program in music at the University of Michigan. And I went in to talk to head of composition, whoever it was at that time. I actually even forgotten that. And anyway, at the time, all anybody really wanted to teach was variants of 12-tone music, modernism of various sorts. And to me, even as a cocky 20-year-old, I knew that that was not what I wanted to do. I've always felt it's not only aesthetically unpleasant, but politically and philosophically reactionary. And so basically, I say my teachers were Wagner, Prokofiev, and Mozart, because I just spent the next few years just studying the great masters and what they did and learning everything that I possibly could. And I never really went through the period of eternally dissonant music, which I've always found repugnant, and I think audiences do too, on the whole, anyway. So this piece, Too Much Coffee Man, is like everything I've written. It's full of melody.
Now, did that choice of not going through conservatory and everything, did that give you any limitations? I mean, not having that credential?
Oh, it's, well, not so much the credential, it's just the context. And for many years, basically, what happened is I fell through the cracks. The contemporary music people wanted nothing to do with what I'd write because I wrote melody, and to them that was horribly retro and anathema to what they were doing. And then the standard repertory people, they have their Mozart, their Beethoven, their Brahms. They really don't need anything else. So it's been a long period where it was very difficult to get performances.
And then what happened?
Well, the big thing that happened in my life was I met the great American tenor, Jerry Hadley. I think I mentioned to you, I did a radio program in San Francisco for many years, a classical music radio program, and I had a chance to meet Jerry Hadley in San Francisco, and we found we had very similar ideas as to what contemporary music should be, or even more importantly, what it should not be. And he was looking for real melody, things that would really show off his beautiful voice, let it you know, soar and do the wonderful things it can do. So he asked me to send him some music. He said, I just recently put out a call for scores, and I've gotten about 200 scores, and, you know, I'll tell you, I didn't find anything that I really wanted to do, but send me some of your stuff. I'd like to see it. So I did, and he called me back a couple of months later, and he said, my God, people say they write melody, but you really do. And he said, I'd like to commission you to write a bunch of things for me. So that opened up a lot of doors.
Yes, indeed. And you wrote some, for example, some music that sets poems of Carl Sandburg to melody, and Jerry Hadley sang them.
That was our first collaboration. Jerry grew up in the corn country of Illinois, which was Carl Sandburg's area, and he always loved the poetry of Carl Sandburg, and so that's what he suggested to me as our first collaboration.
And where did you go from there?
I think it was about that same time that I started this Too Much Coffee Man run with Shannon, actually.
Oh, okay.
Jerry and I had a number of projects on the board, things that he wanted to do. He wanted to do all sorts of different kinds of things, satire as well. But as I'm sure many of listeners know, Jerry, in a deep depression, took his own life about 5 years ago. So.
Right. A tremendous loss.
It was a tremendous loss because he was not only a wonderful singer, but just a great person and a fabulous teacher with young people. He was so good at teaching young people. So that was a big blow, both professionally and personally, because we had gotten to be very close, actually.
We're talking to Daniel Stephen Crafts, composer. Now, you worked years ago with Found Sound. Tell us what that is and how you used it.
Well, I guess I'm considered one of the progenitors of the Found Sound movement. And that was taking whatever could be put on tape in the way of sound effects, speech, or music in the traditional sense, and by tape editing, creating a composition out of it. Now, a lot of people were doing that, but they were essentially of the minimalist movement, and that to me is just as boring as the dissonant music movement. I was never at all interested in minimalism either, and I thought that you could create a composition that not only worked musically, but also had these extra musical connotations. If you had the sound of a baby crying, for example, that should suggest to you something about a baby, and then you combine that image with other images, and it creates a sound world that has some meaning in some sense or another. But again, I wanted to bring in the quality of satire, and so the piece that got put onto an LP is called the Snake Oil Symphony, which is essentially just a giant metaphor for capitalist social relations, basically. But it's lots of satire and lots of humor all the way through it. And it's taken from all sorts of bizarre sources.
Do you think we could hear just a little clip of that?
Oh, sure. That takes me back a ways, but...
Yeah, that's what, 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, more than I care to think about.
We got all kinds of nostrums and remedies.
A variety of ingredients.
He can create an appetite in the prospective customer that isn't hungry.
Now, for the very first time...
Selling is not limited just to people called salesmen, for we all have something to sell.
The doctor sells his patients, the lawyer sells his jury, the pastor sells his sermon to the congregation, the lover sells his love to his sweetheart, the peanut vendor sells his peanuts.
We got all kinds of nostrums and remedies.
Yes, everyone selling together blends hearts and minds and spirits, just as the musicians in an orchestra harmonize musical tones to create a mighty symphony of prosperity.
And that was music or found sound by Daniel Stephen Crafts from the Snake Oil Symphony. Now, you've lived in New Mexico for, what, about a decade. How has being here influenced your work?
I'm not certain it has necessarily, other than the fact that I love being here. I have always loved the American Southwest, and I spent many years backpacking, like in Utah and New Mexico. And so living here is great. I love it.
I saw that didn't you do a piece based on La Llorona?
I did. One of my dearest friends since coming here is Rodolfo Anaya, and we've actually done two works together. But the biggest one was an opera, and this is a full scale traditional old fashioned opera of La Llorona, which is an Hispanic legend that is as seminal to Hispanic culture as, say, Cinderella is to European culture.
Yeah.
And that I had the first crack at turning it into an opera gives me no end of satisfaction. And working with Rudy, he's a wonderful, wonderful man, and was very happy to recast his play into singable language for me so that I could make it into an opera.
Where was it performed?
Well, we've never been able to do the whole thing. We've never been able to get the resources of a decent-sized opera company to put it on. But we've done excerpts of it several times in San Francisco. And in 2008, we did excerpts of it with a small chamber group and wonderful singers at the Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque.
So what are you working on now?
Well, I'm very much looking forward to a new Gonzo opera that's being written for me by my friend Rick Huff, who's a wonderful writer full of comedy and satire. And he has an idea. Well, he's almost finished with it. He's going to show it to me very shortly. It's called Baggage. And it talks about all the kind of psychological baggage that people carry around with them. But not only do they carry it around psychologically, the baggage actually manifests itself as people that other people have to carry around with them. It sounds like a great idea for lots of comedy and satire.
Yes, indeed. It sounds like you have fun no matter what you do.
Well, I sure try. I surely do try. If I could, let me tell you about the people who are performing in this Too Much Coffee Man production. Honestly, of all the times that we've done it, I think this is the best musically that we've ever done. We have players from the New Mexico Philharmonic. We have Jean-Luc Maton, bass player, and Lori Lovato as clarinetist. And Maxine Thiveno, who is a wonderful, wonderful organist and conductor and chorus master. She's the pianist in this, and she's absolutely wonderful. And it's her new husband, Edmund Connolly, who's actually British from London, is Too Much Coffee Man. So we have a British Too Much Coffee Man, which gives it a slightly different sense in the couple of lines that he speaks. When you're singing, you really don't know the difference.
Right.
And Nick Pryor is our tenor, is espresso guy, and Monica Cawson, Names familiar to people who come to classical music concerts around the area will know Monica and Nick, and she's a wonderful, wonderful, wise-cracking, gum-snapping barista.
And the object of love of Too Much Coffee Man and Espresso
yes.
Guy.
Oh, yes.
Well, Daniel Stephen Kraft is a composer, and his opera, Too Much Coffee Man, is being performed this weekend, Friday and Saturday, October 5th and 6th, at 7 o'clock in Anna Caseman Hall at the Cathedral Church of St. John. That's at 318 Silver Avenue Southwest in Albuquerque. For more information and for tickets, you can call the Cathedral at 505-247-1581. You can also go on their website, fcmabq.org, and you can go to Daniel Stephen Kraft's website, which is dskrafts.net. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you, Mary Charlotte. It was a great pleasure.
And we'll go out with a little bit of instrumental music, the prelude from Too Much Coffee Man. Now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Dominic Capello. He is curator of TEDx Acequia Madre, which is happening on Saturday, November 3rd. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
So for those who may not have seen TED Talks or heard of them, what is TED and what is TEDx?
TED. Well, TED is a conference that takes place on the West Coast. It's at this point an international conference pulling in all kinds of movers and shakers.
What does TED stand for?
TED, technology, entertainment, and design.
And so it happens on the West Coast, and what is it?
Well, it's an opportunity to bring some pretty amazing thinkers, doers, shakers together in some of the biggest industries in the United States, focused on technology, entertainment, and design, as well as groups that are working in social change, bring them together for a very inspirational day of talks. And what's interesting is this has been going on for decades, and TED decided they wanted to make this opportunity available to people around the world. So they invented TEDx, and TEDx means, if you're in Santa Fe, TEDx Acequia Madre, it means that you can put on your own local conference, and they help you bring together amazing people who have amazing things to say, important things to say, and bring together community-minded people to have a day of inspiration that we hope leads to action.
And so there are such interesting talks given by, I've seen things by doctors and authors and entrepreneurs and all kinds of people. And here in Santa Fe, of course, it has a particular northern New Mexico feel, and a lot of the people who are talking, and there's a couple dozen people, are pretty well known around here.
Well, we have 22 amazing people, and they have a lot to say. They knew applying for this process, they knew that we were looking for people who could look out and identify problems that exist in Santa Fe and New Mexico, and they offer solutions. And that's what we were looking for. People who could envision ways of making Santa Fe and New Mexico a safer, healthier, and more resilient environment for everyone. So we have an incredible lineup of 22 speakers, and I probably can't go into all of them, but we have, you know, Mike Peters, who's the president of St. John's, who's going to discuss the importance of liberal education. We have...
Thank goodness.
Yes. Yeah, well, interesting in these political times that people are thinking liberal education does matter and it does make a difference. And
it's also, as I have said on more than one occasion, it's vocational training if you're going to be a talk show host or any number of other things.
Well, yeah. He'll have a lot to say about its importance. And other speakers include Emily Kaltenbach with the Drug Policy Alliance, who has a lot to say about ending the 40-year war on drugs.
Do we use the adjective failed war on drugs?
Well, we could. I think we should all go hear Emily and hear what she has to say. She has a lot to say, and I think the audience will be thoroughly engaged. We have people coming from the arts, Meow Wolf and Wise Fool, who talk about theater and also talk about social activism. We have people working in the fields of the environment, sustainability, people who are talking about starting up companies in Santa Fe and the challenges they face and the successes they've had. So I think people will be challenged. We have topics around immigrants, health policy.
Yeah, Lois Rudnick, our own KSFR board member and a wonderful person. She's been on the show many times talking about the blame game.
Absolutely. Oh, she has a lot to say, and I guarantee you people will be on the edge of their seats with that talk. So if people go to our site, they can see the 22 talks. TED is a very unique experience. People do come. They're in a theater setting, but it's not a place to just sit passively. You become a participant of a TEDx. You are engaged. You are part of this. And a key part of TEDx is that after the talks, it's in three acts. And after the third act, we have an Act Now reception in the soundstage. And we want every participant to meet every speaker and to engage and to continue the dialogue about the talks and the ideas and creating synergy. So we're excited about moving these ideas into action. And I should say, you know, one of our sponsors is the Santa Fe Community Foundation. And they've been incredibly helpful in terms of making sure that this is a project that serves the community.
So why did you call it a Sequia Madre?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. The truth of the matter is, you know, you have to apply for a name, and the TED Mothership Agency says whether or not you can use that name or not for a year. And the truth of the matter is, Santa Fe was taken. But that forced us to think a little bit more about the name. And
who took Santa Fe?
Well, some wonderful artist who wants to one day put on Santa Fe conference, and that'll be great. But for us, you know, a Sequia Madre, the idea of Mother Ditch, the idea of good ideas that flow outward. I really liked sort of the theme of it. It's almost a philosophy in terms of, I think in Santa Fe there are a lot of resources, amazing people, and what we really need to do is to make sure the amazing ideas that are bubbling up here don't stay here. You know, we know New Mexico faces incredible challenges on almost every level, from hunger to drug abuse to problems with alcohol to the economy. We also know that there are solutions for all these problems, and we need to get our good ideas out and work collaboratively with all the communities throughout New Mexico.
So once, I mean, people can go to it, they can see a simulcast of it, but then once it's done, how do they see these talks?
Well, that's great. Well, all the talks are videotaped, and there's access to the talks. And what's most important is that every speaker is representing an agency, an organization, a business, a political movement, and all of them can use support. So again, the ACT UP reception is really an opportunity to connect. What we need to see is, and this is sort of a grand experiment with TEDx, when we survey all our participants in 6 months and we ask them, as a result of coming to this TEDx, did you join a group, start a group, work on a policy, invest in something new? Did we change your behaviors? Did you go from someone who was thinking about working on something to becoming actively engaged in the community? So we're very interested in seeing how we motivate Santa Feans and New Mexicans. And TEDx Acequia Madre doesn't go away the day after the conference. You know, we exist as an entity, as an all-volunteer organization, and it is our job to connect up amazing projects with amazing people.
And so, but I mean, will it be on YouTube?
You know, at this point, I need to do a little more research on exactly where the videos will be. You know, we video all of them, and we have access to them. And at this point, we're trying to figure out the best place to place them. So
right.
that information will be made available to everyone who's interested.
So this is happening at the Screen at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, which, of course, is a wonderful place to see films. And it's also a place where, in this case, November 3rd, they'll be able to show, for example, slides or PowerPoints of the things they're talking about.
Yeah, we'll have great visuals. And the Santa Fe University of Art and Design is really the perfect environment for a TEDx conference, of course. I mean, you have students who are interested in design and faculty who are actively engaged in the process. So we think we're bringing the community together, from the university to the Santa Fe Community Foundation to all the organizations and agencies represented by our speakers. So this is really community mobilizing around innovation. So we're excited, and we want to say that if you're the kind of person who is an activist, who wants to get engaged in community life and cares about the future of New Mexico, this is the day for you.
And also, if you're just interested in ideas and people and what people are doing.
Absolutely. This is again, not a place just to sit back. It's really a place to kind of sit up straight and listen attentively and see how you can get involved in every project and every idea that's being presented.
Justina Trott, who is a well-known and wonderful physician, I guess retired now from her medical practice, is doing a talk called How an Understanding of Sex, Gender, Race, and Class Can Save Our Lives and Money.
Absolutely, yes. Dr. Trott will be one of our will be an amazing presenter, and her ideas are incredibly important to listen to and to act on.
Have you seen all these talks in progress?
Well, you know, part of my job as curator was to get the outlines of all the talks in advance so that I could look at them and our committee could look and offer up some ideas. So I've had a little preview of every talk, and I can tell you that they're amazing and they're inspiring and they will motivate people.
What does it take to do a good TED talk? I would imagine that there are people who are potentially good, but they need some help, just like an actor needs a director.
Absolutely. Well, a good TEDx talk does benefit from a number of things. First, I think some people just have a natural ability to connect with an audience, and we have a number of very natural speakers. And for those who aren't quite there yet, we have what's called our TEDx coaching session. So all the speakers meet with us four times and do their talks, and we offer a critique and ideas. So it's a creative and it's an interesting process getting this TEDx organized and developed and ready for an audience.
How did you find all the people who are going to be in it?
Well, that's a great question. We put up a website and we had an application process and said, share your idea, share your action steps. And Santa Fe is a pretty interesting place. You know, lots of people connected to other people. And so people from the foundation knew people. And then we knew people involved in a number of agencies and organizations, cultural groups, and it really spread. We had over 100 proposals, and we picked the 22 TED Talks that we thought would really be exciting for our first TEDx.
Are there going to be more TEDxes?
Well, why don't we see how this one goes? I am very optimistic. I think this is going to be an incredible success. I think people will want more. And those of us involved in TEDx, Acequia Madre, are very excited about moving this project forward.
Now, we're talking to Dominic Capello about TEDx Acequia Madre, which is happening on Saturday, the 3rd of November. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And my only relationship with the TED Talks in general has been watching them on YouTube, usually when somebody sends me a link. And they're invariably interesting, sometimes very interesting. And there is I have the sense that they're making a difference, but is there any way to track that? Like, is the TED organization itself trying to see what the effect of this spread of ideas really, what effect it has?
That's a great question. In terms of TED, the mothership organization, their website's pretty interesting in terms of the kinds of projects they're trying to get going that really do impact the lives of people. I don't know exactly their evaluation process. I can tell you our evaluation process, which is we will survey our attendees 6 months after TED, and we will be asking them, as a result of attending TED, did you change your behaviors?
Right.
Did you join a group? Did you get more involved? We do want to know, does this unique experience motivate people to
right.
get involved in the community?
Very interesting. As you said, we can't mention everybody, but Cecile Lipworth is going to be there. She works with Eve Ensler, and she's giving what looks to be quite an interesting talk herself.
Yes, she has a lot to say about women and about ending violence against women, and she has some very important things to say about what we need to do as a community, as a state, and essentially as a world to end violence against women. And I think her talk will be quite interesting and leave a lot of people thinking a lot about what they need to do to get involved in the end of violence.
So the TED Talk tickets go on sale tomorrow, Wednesday. How can people get tickets and how can they get involved?
Well, what they need to do is first understand that the tickets are going to go pretty fast. The screen is a lovely theater. It's not a huge theater. And most people know where the screen is. You can Google the screen Santa Fe and that website will get you there. Also, www.tedxasequiamadre.com. Click there, go to attend, and it'll just track you right into ticket sales. So one way or the other, two sites can get you to the same place. And the screen is really our host, and tickets will go quickly. So if you're interested, now is the time to consider going online and getting ready to get the ticket on the 3rd.
Are there any locations where you're going to simulcast them?
Well, at this point, we're not exactly sure. We're hearing from lots of people that there is a real interest in simulcast, and so we're still in the process. You know, as an all-volunteer organization, we're kind of all over the place trying to make sure the TED itself goes well, the TEDx goes well, and also making sure that those who want to plug in can. So go to our website for updates. We can share what's going on, and we are thrilled to get the support of the Santa Fe community.
Dominic Capello is curator of TEDx Acequia Madre, which is on the web at tedxacequiamadre.com. And once again, Saturday, November 3rd, is the event Technology, Entertainment, and Design, the independent Santa Fe production with 22 different speakers, an absolutely wonderful schedule with proper breaks for, look at this, beverages, fruits, and nuts. It's a non-junk food talk. I can't believe it.
We have some speakers talking about healthy food, so we really have to make sure lunch, which is provided in the ticket, and our breaks really are about replenishment.
Excellent. And so all of that is coming up. Dominic, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.